हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय। सो परमात्मा संदर्भ अध्याय 4 अधिकरण 1 जीवस एंटेंगलमेंट एंड लिबरेशन पेज 24। Just as qualities like quivering of the reflection of the moon are seen, created by the medium, upadi, water, though the moon in the sky does not quiver, similarly the qualities of the material upadis appear on the pure Atma, who becomes the seer, the Atma in a covered state, drashtu, or the material ahankar, represented by the reflection, which identifies the self with the upadis. Because of Maya thinking, I am that material upadi. The Atma is pure, but he sees himself as a material body. By identification, it is said. Just as one may imitate persons whom one sees dancing and singing, similarly the soul, although never the doer of material activities, is thus forced to imitate the qualities of the intelligence. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:22-53. Right? Because the intelligence is able to perceive these things and analyze, and so therefore then you just start taking on those qualities. Udriti, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Though the jiva is different from what he sees, he accepts the qualities of what he sees. An example is given. Just as the child follows in his mind the tunes, feet, and rasas depicted by a dancer, singer on seeing them, the jiva is made to imitate the qualities of the intelligence by the force of the gunas. It is also said, because then by the force of the gunas, you just identify and you want to be involved in that way. So it just works like that. It is also said, shudho vichaste yavishudha kartu. The pure jiva becomes absorbed in the actions of the conditioned soul. Srimad Bhagavatam 5:11-12. The affix V in Vichashte indicates absorption. Udriti, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur elaborates on this topic in Tattva Sutras as follows. The senses and mind, what they perceive, and the results produced by their actions, acts of perception, are all material. These are all created within the material world. And they are all the result of the soul's misidentifying itself as a material body. Tattva Sutras, verse 30. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The word indriyani here refers to both the knowledge acquiring senses and the working senses. What the knowledge acquiring senses perceive is form, taste, smell, sound, and touch. What the working senses do is the five actions, that which begin with walking. The results produced by their acts of perception are the mind's ability of accepting some things and rejecting others. All these are material, for they are all created within the material world, and they are all the result of the soul's misidentifying himself as a material body. In the Upanishads, it is said, from the supreme, all the life airs and all the senses were created. Then he created the mind. In the Katha Upanishad 2:3, 7-8, it is said, higher than the senses are the sense objects. Higher than the sense objects are the mind. Higher than the mind is the intelligence. Higher than the intelligence is the soul. Higher than the soul is the Mahatattva. Higher than the Mahatattva is the unmanifested. Higher than the unmanifested is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nothing is higher than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the highest. He is the supreme destination. So as long as then, if we connect to Krishna, then everything becomes perfect. If we don't connect to Krishna, you correct less than that, you will stay within the material sphere, right? So therefore, the impersonalists, they're not connecting with the Supreme Lord, they will stay in the material world, right? Even if they get out, they get into the layers of the universe or into the Mahatattva or whatever it is that they do, they will remain within the material world, right? That's what's going to happen. So as we saw, but once these, as Lord Chaitanya is describing to Sanatana Goswami, as once these living entities become attracted to Krishna, then all these Atmaramas who may be on these various levels of transcendence, then they are able to appreciate the Lord himself as a person. And then absorption in the Lord, that takes them beyond. Then they move up to Shanta Ras. That then is actual liberation. Because before that, it's not actual liberation. You call it liberation. It's called a kind of liberation. But it's not an actual liberation. You know, it's just like, let us say, getting a meal, let's say, in the train station, right? You'll call it food, but you won't necessarily say that that's the standard, right? You know, you'll have a standard of what you eat, and that's just because there's nothing else. So you eat that. So you can call it food. You could call it a meal, but it's not actually. Does that make sense? You know, so the same way is that these Atmaramas, until they come to this point of seeing that above the unmanifest is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then only they come to the liberated platform. So then that's the point. The jiva gets entangled because he's meditating on anything below the Supreme Lord. That's the point. Conditioned soul means it's not about the Lord. So as soon as the soul accepts the Lord, then he may be conditioned, but now he's facing the Lord, right? He's antarmukh, though still conditioned, right? So that can, that so so that position is very fortunate. That's good. Bhaktivinoda. While the materialists, they're bahirmukh, they're faced away from Krishna. Even if they're very pious, they're Lord Brahma, they may be very close on that. And someone else is sinful and very low here, but they're all facing away. And the devotee is facing towards the Lord. So even if they're back, but they're facing, they're moving forward. Then you have those that are liberated. Thus the Lord, possessing power, the inconceivable Antaranga Shakti in his Swarup, is not touched by Maya, even though it is also strong and inconceivable. But the jiva is touched by Maya. That is the conclusion. Sugadev spoke thus, the verse.
Maharaj?
Yes.
So when we say that Krishna is all attractive, this is the meaning of Krishna. So can we say that even the people who are demoniac can be attracted by some aspect of Krishna?
Means everyone's always attracted by some aspect of Krishna, just they don't attribute it to Krishna, that's all.
Yes.
You know, so, but they attribute it to the material energy. Because, see, everything is Krishna's potency. That means how everything runs is Krishna's, is Krishna. He makes everything run. He makes it attractive. He makes it function. He makes it give results, or he makes it so it can transform in particular ways. You know, these are what we know as the laws of nature, the laws of God. So everyone is exclusively attracted to Krishna, but they don't see it connected to Krishna. That's why it's demoniac. Right. And with the demoniac, within demoniac, you see, in this, we're looking at it from your descending process. Then even if the person's pious, he's following the Vedic culture, he's performing his duties, it's still demoniac because it's not including Krishna. Right. So that's the difficulty. So there may be pious and impious within that. Then the daiva means then it's connected to Krishna. Right. So now whether they are already liberated or whether they're conditioned but absorbed in Krishna, then that they're the daiva, right? Down in the material world, then you say the demons are, you know, in this particular group or particular families, particular planetary systems. But one has to understand is that in these definitions, they always go up higher and higher. The same definition on one level, when it goes to the next level, then it has a broader meaning and it goes above, it goes until it gets to Krishna. So he's the supreme, he's the highest, he's the supreme destination. You know, we'll say, oh no, but if you got there, it has to keep going. No, it doesn't. That's just our material logic says that. And so that starts with the consciousness of the person on Anamoy, right? Someone who has the consciousness of, you know, as an atheistic immoralist. Is their point is that, you know, you say there's a God and everything comes from him, but where did he come from? You know, and they're very smug in that. See, I defeated it all. It's like, no, you didn't. Point is God means that from which everything comes. He doesn't have an origin. That's why he's God. If he had an origin, he wouldn't be God. You know, so like that. Then they,
The difficulty is, I think it is said that in the Kali Yuga, the divine and demoniac quality are in the same person.
Yes, yes. It is a problem.
Yes.
But the aspect is that, you know, we're absorbed in Krishna, and so therefore then there's no problem. You know, it will go away. We will advance. We will develop. So that's the whole point, is that these natures are there. Because even you're that one has a materialistic mentality, that's already considered, you know, a non-important. It's superficial for the living entity. Because the living entity's nature is that of service to Krishna. So it's not a foreign state. It's a natural state.
Yes.
Right? So all it is that by purification, we're uncovering that natural state. So that's why we avoid things that will bind us, because then we don't uncover it. And the only value in purifying the heart and, you know, by avoiding, you know, improper activities and all that, the anartha nivriti, its value is it just uncovers its natural state. You know, it'd be just like, let's say we have a gold ring and it's dropped in the mud. And so then we wash it off. We follow a process of cleansing. But it's not that the process of cleansing is the important part. It only has importance when it comes to how it assists in bringing the ring back to its natural state. Right? But we may attribute its own position to it, because that will be a pious activity. Right? Pious activities are those that bring you closer to the Lord. It's not necessarily understood that way, because people see it, if they're seeing God as money, then piety brings them closer to God by bringing you closer to money.
Yes.
Right? So So it's not necessarily understood, this whole thing of what is piety, and that we have our own definitions, our own practices. You know, like Prabhupada mentions faith. We take it religion means faith. But the problem is the difficulty comes in is religion means the eternal nature of something. Right? So faith can change. So religion can't mean faith. Religion has to mean something that's eternal, that doesn't change. So the inherent nature of something doesn't change. That's the religion. So therefore, the soul's religion, what doesn't change, no matter what the situation is, they serve.
Yes.
Right? And so then the natural position being a spiritual entity, then that service is directed towards God. So the actual point is they're servants of the Lord. That's the position. They're servants of Krishna. That's dharma. That's religion. So then all other religious activities, means in other words, the other, what we call religion, are those activities that can be engaged in support of our actual religion of serving Krishna.
Yes.
Then it's useful. Just like in the kitchen, anything that can be used in to further the process of cooking, then we call them kitchen utensils. You know?
Yes.
Like that. So even if we're doing things that are supportive of, let's say we're cutting vegetables, someone says, what are you doing? Oh, what is he doing? Oh, he's cooking. So technically he's not. He's only preparing for cooking. You know? Or at the time he happens to be washing a pot, you know, he will still say he's cooking because it's all in support of. So all these things are considered religious because they are in support of the actual religion, which is service to the Lord. Like that. So that's then where religion comes in. But we, in the modern, it's mistakenly taken that it means faith, the kind of faith. But actually, it doesn't mean that, because that can change. So the point is, the various faith is there. How is that supporting the soul's relationship with the Supreme Lord in the position of servant? Is that okay?
Yes, Maharaj, thank you. Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. Vriti. The current Adhikarana has summarized the entanglement in the material world and the means to become liberated. In other words, forgetting Krishna, he's become entangled. Remembering Krishna, he becomes liberated. It's actually that simple. Now, there's a whole sophisticated science of how that works. But the point is you remember Krishna, you get liberated. You forget Krishna, you get bound. It's that straightforward. The difference between the jiva, who has a tendency to become subjugated by maya, and the Supreme Lord, who is always untouched by maya, is also enunciated here, right? Because the Lord can't become covered by maya. It's his energy. It means his internal potency is part of his sarup, right? And so then he only deals with that internal potency. The internal potency has a feature that then is transforms into the material world. So he never engages with that. Even if he's in the material world, he's still with his entourage. You know what I'm saying? Let us say we go into the garage, right? So then, you know, we're going to do something, some work there. We may go in, put on, you know, suitable clothes for the garage, you know, get in there and, you know, we'll get involved and get dirty, right? That, right? But now let's say, you know, this, if the king happens to come to your garage, he's going to come with all his associates wearing his kingly outfit and all that and see what's going on and do what he does. It doesn't matter whether it's in your garage or in his palace, like it's going to be. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that Krishna, being with his internal potency, he doesn't have to deal with the external. Even if he performs pastimes in the material world, he's still only working with his internal potency, because the external potency is what it deals with us. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say you have the prison warden. You know, that warden then deals with us in one way if we're in the prison, and it deals with the, let's say, the governor in a different way. You know? So that's the thing I mentioned before. I was in one gentleman's office, and he, you know, big industrialist. And so then he's there, very gentle, very humble, you know, very, you know, sensitive and considerate of everything we're doing and talking and all that. And then one of his supervisors comes in, you know, it's some kind of an emergency. And he stands up and starts yelling and screaming at the guy, you know, because he's messed up. Like this, and you know, goes to the door and sends them out the door, calls someone else, this and that, is yelling and screaming and all that. And when that's all done, he closes the door and immediately goes back into that humble, you know, submissive mood, sitting down and, you know, oh, excuse me, Swamiji, you were saying, you know, going on like that. So we have to say, no, it's two different people. No, it's two different offices. So the internal potency, he only deals with internal potency. He doesn't have to deal with external. So even if he's in the material world, that material world is a feature of his internal potency. He only deals with the internal potency. He never has to deal with the external potency because that's the way he likes it. Yeah. Okay. Having addressed, you know, thus it is proven that the faults of the jiva and the material creation doesn't apply to the Lord. Having addressed the doubt regarding the conditioning of the jiva, next Adhikarana commences to address the doubt regarding the Lord's inaction in relation to the suffering of the conditioned soul. Right? In other words, we clear one doubt and then the next doubt naturally just comes up because we're, you know, it can't be. Because then if it's, okay, you know, we're here, you know, and this and that and this, no, but we're overcome, the Lord's not, you know, but then, you know, then it comes down to, well, how can the Lord allow that? You know? Adhikarana 2. The Lord's actions are without hatred or prejudice. Like it's a thing, you know, he's, you know, somebody's suffering, someone's this. Because that's how it'll be in the modern kind of religious faith, is that piety means I'm pious, therefore I'll get all good results. It's a matter of economic development. So in other words, the intelligent person turns to religion for economic development, but thinking just the mechanics of economics is what will create the development. So they're more intelligent, but they're not as intelligent as the devotee who understands that, no, it's all coming by the Lord's grace. So you turn to the Lord. So they're only turning in as much as the Lord is giving the facility. So if someone's doing something wrong, then you expect that that person who is doing wrong will be punished. And if they are, then you're satisfied, you have faith in the Lord. But let's say at the present time, he's not punished. You know, and then one will be upset with that. So the whole point is we have to get beyond this. The Lord doesn't, he acts without hatred or prejudice. Anuchedas 93-104. So even if they translate it as he's a jealous God, but it doesn't say there's envy or hatred or prejudice. It just means that the jealousy means that there's the element of he wants to be part of the relationship. Right. And so if we are, then nice. And if he's not, then what to do? He'll reciprocate with you as you deal with him. But being a person, he would rather interact. Adhikarana Prakashita. Having explained how the jiva, though pure by nature, is conditioned by the material modes and how the Supreme Lord remains unaffected, the current Adhikarana elaborates on the final doubt raised by Vidura as to why the Lord remains indifferent to the jiva's suffering, though situated as the supersoul in his heart. Anucheda 93 elaborates that the Lord's appearance in this world is only for his devotees, and he does nothing in regards to the protection of the universe. The protection of the universe happens as a secondary action through his Maya Shakti, right? So it means he's in control, so it's protected, but that's his secondary, who punishes the demons and rewards the demigods based on their previous karmas. The actions of the Lord while performing pastimes in this world can't be regarded as partial because they are enacted out of his mercy. Even the Lord's killing of the demons is beneficial for them because it liberates them from their envious mentality. This is further elucidated in the next few Anuchedas by citing the discussion between Sukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj, where the king presents inquiries. Quote, why does the Lord kill the demons for the sake of Indra as if partial, even though he has nothing to gain from the devas and nothing to fear or envy the demons? Right? So it means if he supports the demigods, he'll gain nothing from that. And at the same time, the demons aren't creating any problem for him in the way of that. How can they? He has no fear of them. The biggest, like we see Hiranyakashipu, the biggest demon that there ever was, right? So then Just with his nails, the Lord kills him. And that's after playing with him like a cat plays with a mouse. You know, the cats will catch the mouse and let it go. And then they'll let it go. And the mouse will start to run. And they'll catch it again. And then they'll, you know, so they play. So for the Lord, there's no fear, even though everybody was serving him like that. In reply to Prikamara's query, Sukadeva Goswami first states that the Lord shouldn't be judged from the mundane perceptive by imposing material qualities on him, because his activities are enacted in the state of pure goodness, which is beyond the influence of the three modes. The three material modes belong to the Maya Shakti, can't function together, or they can't increase or decrease simultaneously, whereas the Lord's personal Shakti can resolve all such contradictions, because the Lord is the possessor of inconceivable potencies, right? Because the modes, one is always prominent, and then the others are fighting to get prominence, like that. But his internal potency, they all can be perfectly balanced. There's no fight. It all just works so nicely together. So even though you have all these contradictory elements, they all perfectly work together. Thus, the Lord at all times asks primarily for the pleasure of his dear devotees, and secondarily favors the demigods, demons, or rakshasas by manifesting his potency in them based on the prominence of goodness, passion, and ignorance. This may raise the doubt whether the Lord is bound by the time factor to reward the demigods and demons when the respective modes are prominent. However, the Lord is fully independent. The time factor follows his actions at all times. Thus, the time which influences the gunas is a secondary form, not the direct form which acts for an enhancing the devotion of the Lord's devotees towards him. Right? So time is influencing the demons and the demigods, but actually the relationship between the Lord and the devotees, time isn't actually an influence there. The Lord is personally involved only in interaction with his devotees, even during the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe. And thus, the potency of time restricts only the actions of material energy, but not the Lord. Therefore, the Lord, as Paramatma, is free from hatred or prejudice as he showers mercy on all the conditioned souls, on the conditioned jivas, by empowering them suitable to the mode through the time factor. Right, so they get their potencies, and that he's benefiting everybody by giving them what they want, depending upon what mode they're in. So if someone's in goodness, then they'll get the natural results of performing their duties without that attachment. You know, they'll get a proper result. If they're doing it in passion, then they may get, but they're following mechanics properly, they'll get the result, but it still will give them misery, right? And if they're working in ignorance, then they're going against what should be done. And so then the results that they get will be opposite of what they think they should be. You know, so that's the, we see in the modern culture is that people go against the natural laws of nature, and they're really convinced that they'll get a positive result. You know, is that like we see Venu. Then, you know, the king was gone, his father had left, and so therefore then there was so much disturbance. And so then they saw, well, better you have some authority, and so they put Venu in place, right? Because they know the rogues and rascals will do, you know, all nonsense stuff. So in the same way, as we have to follow the laws and that are set out by the Lord, the recommendation, because if you don't, then everyone will just do whatever they want. You know, as Manu mentions, everyone will just rage against each other. Everyone will fight. If there's no sense of punishment, that there's some authority that punishes, then everything will go wrong. No one will do anything right, because they'll think I can get away with anything. They will. As soon as somebody finds out there's a loophole, then everybody just takes advantage of that loophole. They don't. It's not that it's based on, oh, it's I should do this because I should. No, it's just a matter of they do because they can. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. So you have to have a structure. So according to the mode, they get the results because Krishna sets the standard, not everybody else. So you follow Krishna's standard, you get that appropriate result. You don't follow, you don't. That's all. Anucheda 93. Though the Lord's creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe have been explained, the conclusion is again presented to answer specific doubts in the manner of uprooting a stump of a tree, right? So in other words, the tree has been cut down, but then there may be some doubts. So you uproot the stump, then there's nothing left. Right? Because otherwise the tree is not there, it's not going to grow, but there might be some doubts. So, okay, you uproot the stump also. Why not? So then the doubt. One hears, Purvapaksha, one hears of the various avatars who side with the Devatas, giving them mercy with smiles and gestures of fearlessness, or killing demons in battle. Are these pastimes done by the Supreme Lord or not? Does he make these avatar forms? If made by the Supreme Lord, then the Lord must be material and must be partial, taking sides. The Lord does not produce these forms or perform these pastimes, then they are not part of the Lord's sarup. This goes against your proposition, right? You know, because that means the doubts always come up because we look at everything from our own perspective, from our own viewpoint, you know, according to time and space and how everything were conditioned. So the difficulty comes is that they don't actually look at it from the Lord's perspective, how he's established everything. So Krishna consciousness means you look at it the way the Lord has established it. That's the whole principle. But Uttara, concerning this doubt, this should be said. It is true that the Supreme Lord does nothing in regard to protecting of the universe. However, he reveals pastimes in various avatars, manifested through his Sarup Shakti in order to give bliss to his Vaikuntha associates who appear along with him and to other devotees, including Devatas, who control the universe. And so he's just giving bliss to his devotees, and the Devatas happen to be devotees. And so then he's giving bliss to them also by the pastime. It is said in Padma Puran, even though I can kill the demons in a moment, I perform various actions to give pleasure to my devotees. Just as the fish by seeing, the turtle by thought, and the bird by touch nourish their young, I nourish my devotees. Like that. So like that. Then by his various actions and all that, by his pastimes, he nourishes the devotees. Hari Bhakti Shudodoy says, Nityam cha purna tamasya janmani vibhidhani me bhakta sarveshta danaya tasmat kim te priyam vara. I am fully satisfied eternally. I take various births in order to fulfill the desires of my devotees. Tell me your desire. Kunti says the Lord descends in order to arrange for bhakti. Bhakti yoga. Vidhanartam, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.20. According to the commentary of Sridhar Swami, Bhakti Yoga Vidhanartam means you have appeared for the performance of bhakti. Brahma says, my dear master, although you have nothing to do with material existence, you come to this earth and imitate material life just to expand the varieties of ecstatic enjoyment for your surrendered souls. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.37. Brahma also states that the Lord appears by his Sarup Shakti. When I create this universe endowed with his power, may the Lord, who benedicts the surrendered souls and manifests attractive qualities when he appears in the world by his internal energy, engage my mind in his pastimes, which he performs, so that I can avoid the sins involved in creating. Right? So then Brahma, because then sins involved in creating, because then he may think I'm the controller I'm the enjoyer. I've made this. It's mine. Like that. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.9.23. Grihita Gunavatara means he who appears as an avatar with attractive qualities like mercy. Though the Lord appears in the universe to give bliss to the devotees. Secondarily, actions which side with the devatas to protect the universe occur on their own through his maya. It is like the following situation. Some devotees in this world gather together, expressing their prema for the Lord to each other. They gather some mridanga players, even unknown to them, and they dance madly out of bliss on hearing the Lord's qualities. By this action, spontaneously, they destroy all inauspiciousness in the universe and increase auspiciousness, right? Means, so they're performing their pastimes and along with others who have the qualification to take part in those pastimes. Like here, it gives the example of kirtan. So you may bring a good mridanga player to take part in that. I remember in Calcutta, we used to have, in the 70s, you had the person who would bring the milk, the gosh who would bring the milk. He was an expert mridanga player. So when he would bring, in the evening, you know, after delivering milk and that, then he would play drum for the kirtan. And he was really, really good. So it's very, very interesting like that. But he was just the gosh that had to, you know, nobody knows him or anything like that. Just he's the guy that delivers milk. So he comes, he plays, and very nice kirtan. So demigods get benefit, you know, and everything else. So it just makes auspiciousness. So that, yeah. A devotee whose speech is choked up, whose heart is melted, who cries continually and sometimes laughs, sometimes feels ashamed, sometimes sings loudly, and sometimes dances. A devotee thus fixed in loving service to me purifies the entire universe. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.24. Because that's what the universe is for. So if someone is doing that, the whole universe gets purified. You know, just like if people perform pious activities, then that place where they perform those or the place of where that can have influence, then is it has purification. So, and that's just performing those activities that are useful in bhakti, you know, activities or mentalities, you know, that are knowledge that's useful, then that's considered pious. But now if it's actually being used in Krishna's service, and people are actually absorbed in, you know, this transcendental thought of the Lord in transcendental ecstasy, the whole universe becomes benefited. So that's why then these great personalities, like you see Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, just him sitting there under his boat, you know, on the bank of the Ganga, then he is purifying the whole universe and making the atmosphere favorable for, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur to establish the whole Gaudiya Vaishnava mission, right? But if you're not on that platform, you know, if you're not on this platform, then better you stick to the, you know, standard activities, right? It's not that the Gaudiyanandas may not feel like this, but they'll also be preaching. But him, just by being like this, he's setting the whole stage for the whole universe to take up Krishna consciousness. And whoever would come, he would preach. It is said that Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.24, Shri Shyadikam Harer Naiva Prayojanam Apekshyatu Kurute Kevala Nandad Yata Matasya Nartanam. The Lord creates the world out of pure bliss with no purpose, like the creation made by a madman, Narayana Samhita. So he's just doing it out of his thinking of the living entities and how they have an opportunity to come to him. So the creation of the universe, there's not in the universe itself, how it functions and manifests. There's nothing there for the Lord to gain from. It's that if the living entities use this universe to become Krishna conscious, then that's where then that interaction with the Lord and all that takes place. Then it becomes of use. One should not infer the self-satisfied nature of the Lord, and the devotees will be dissipated if the Lord makes the devotees happy. And the devotees make the Lord happy, and the Lord shows partiality since he ignores others. Right, because they're saying, oh no, but they're ignoring others and all that, so how can they be happy? You know, we see this kind of mentality very much. You know, the thing is, oh no, but if it's not organic, you know, Krishna won't eat it. Why would he eat non-organic food? Or, oh, it's not, you know, ahimsa milk. You know, Krishna won't take that. You know, you can't offer that because he won't eat it. You know, so they're making these things that, oh, you know, he's partial. He does this, you know, all these social, political, you know, platitudes that are important to us. Krishna perfectly agrees with those, and you know, that's his platform, and that's why we respect him as God, because he's in the same group as us, you know. But no, that's not how it works. It's all about religious principles are only useful if they're connected to the Lord. So what's connected to the Lord becomes useful. And even if you have a wonderful situation, if it's not connected to the Lord, so they're making that, no, this situation itself inherently is good. You know, organic carrots are inherently good. No, they're only good if they're used in the Lord's service. Because out in the forest and all that, and in the jungle, all that grows is organic. There's nothing else growing. And so it's not that, you know, all the living entities there are in ecstasy or something like that. So it's a misnomer that we're looking at it. What is my gain, my values, my, you know, it's the same principle. We'll see all doubts come up because we look at it from our perspective, not from the reality of what actually is the perspective. It means if once one sees the samasti aspect, then one can see the vyasti or one's own position within that. Once you understand the descending knowledge, then you can see your position in how that connects with that and how you would apply that. But if you approach the descending knowledge from your ascending, you will never, you can never ascend to that point because it's limited to the first covering of the universe, right? And that's if you're lucky enough to get that far. Most people can't get beyond just, you know, the local, you know, well, you know, their own house or their own, you know, like that. So they can't, yes.
As you said, the point, like, you know, when you go through Vyasti, the maximum we see people reaching is having the pessimistic view of material world. That, oh, yes, everything in the material world is miserable, like which the smartas are. They always have that pessimistic view. But never we reach to the platform to understand the original bliss of Krishna consciousness.
Yes, yes, they can't. So you have to start with the descending. And then within that, now you look at yourself. So all these other political platforms, and you see they take them so strongly, you know, it's just like that it's organic or it's natural or it's these kind of things or it's ahimsa or that this is more important, that they get more riled up about that than, let's say, chanting Hare Krishna, you know, or other things like that. So you know that something's not balanced here, because it's just they relate to it so much because that's their conditioning. If they didn't have the conditioning for that, they wouldn't care less. Like that, you know, so that's the whole point, is that they're caring for that. They don't care for something else. Are they worrying about the poor koalas or, you know, well, you know, no, they're just worrying about, they have their particular scene and all that. And that's all. Yes.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Can we say, it is said here that the Lord through partiality seems he ignores others. Can we say that the fact that he ignores other person is like a teaching?
No, the point is that they're saying, he's saying you shouldn't infer this, that he's ignoring others. He's sitting in everyone's heart, so how is he ignoring? He's telling the demon, no, you should do like this, but the demon insists on doing like that. And so then Krishna, you know, as Prabhupada says, he says that, okay, at your own risk, you do it.
Yes.
You know, and he'll make arrangements. You want that? Okay, we'll arrange, you know, but it's arranged with the modes. But it's sanctioned by the Lord, and so then it happens. So he's not ignoring anybody. He's in the heart of everyone, so he's dealing in that way. But in the pastime, then he may be dealing with one person and ignoring the other. Because the point is, the demons, what's the universe for? The universe is for developing pure devotional service. The demons are not famous for being about pure devotional service. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, then you can't blame the Lord for that.
Yes, Nigel. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, it means if that's what it's for, you know, it's just like you have something that you're doing. Let's say you're playing, let's say, football, okay? And then someone comes on the pitch with a cricket bat. And they get out there and start hitting the ball with the cricket bat, you know? And that they hit it outside into the stands and they go there, yeah, six, you know, like that, you know, and everybody else is going, no, it has to go in that little box down there where that funny guy dressed up is, like that. And so that's the whole thing, is you're doing something else. It's not for. So the material world is not for anything other than practicing devotional service to go back to Godhead. So when the demons, they do their own stuff, why you would want to pay attention to them means within the pastime, if they're going against what actually the whole purpose is of the universe and of the pastime. You know, so you can't look at, because we want to look at it from our own perspective. No, he's doing this. You know, it's just like it's interesting. So the other day, someone was pointing out that, you know, like all over the world, but especially it's entertaining the turmoil going on in America, right? So now let us say you have a bunch of people come out into the street. They throw, you know, how you say, things at the police. They burn things. They break things. They steal things. You know, police are killed, this and that. They will say that they were that, but now let's say it's for a political issue, right? That is supported by the media, right?
Yes.
You know, some liberal issue. They will say they're protesters, mm-hmm. right? Now yes. Let's say it's not supporting that. Now it's rioters.
Yes.
Right. And then when it was supporting a political candidate that the media completely hates, now it's insurgency. Right. You know, it's like they're terrorists. They're going against the government. They're, you know, and so, you know, in what do you call it? Not treachery, trade, you know, something with a T where it means that you've gone against the government and then you can be killed for that.
Treason.
Treason, yes. They'll say it's treason. It's the same exact thing. Now, if it had been if that had been those from the party supported by the media, they would have said, see, the people have shown their voice, they're protesting, they don't agree with this, you know, we should take this seriously. But if they oppose what the media thinks, then now they're rioters or insurgents or terrorists or. So that's the whole difficulty, is that depending upon the particular position and their modes, then people just say things accordingly to what it is personally important to them, rather than take what's Krishna's position. What does Krishna say about this? You know, just like Balaram, he's, you could say, basically controlling the whole cosmos, right? Because with the Kriya Shakti, he's creating all the different things. He's doing all, you know, it's his expansions that are all the avatars, everything like that. So you can say, you know, he's got a good position. He's in a solid position. So then we see many times it happens that in the past times that something comes up and everybody gets disturbed and Balaram gets disturbed and, you know, things are all going on and they're all ranting and raving and, you know, bring my chariot, bring my armor, you know, this, that, and, you know, so many different things. But then in doing this, then Balaram turns around and sees Krishna. And he's just peacefully sitting there. He's not taking part in this mood. Yeah, yeah. So then he makes everybody, hey, everybody be quiet. We're all being stupid here. Since Krishna seems to be perfectly fine with this. So you know, there's something going on here. So then the last Krishna. And then Krishna will say, well, hey, look at it. You're saying that Arjuna stole Subhadra and, you know, we put him up for these 4 months and, you know, and gave him all hospitality and respect. And this is how he repays our respect and, you know, makes a whole scene out of it, you know, like that. And then you know, Balaram gets angry again. And then, you know, Krishna comes and now he says, but look at it. You're saying he's an outsider. He's not. He's the son of Kunti. Kunti's our girl. Like Kunti is the sister of Vasudeva. She's a Yadu. She's one of us. So he's actually the nephew. He's a cousin to us. He's family. And they all go, oh, okay, yeah, right. You know? And you know, and that, and then he says, and besides that, you know, so, you know, him's taking, so it's family. He's not insulting. Beside that, he's on my chariot with my horses, and there's no way any of you will be able to catch him. And then they go, oh, okay, that's a practical point. And so he says, so therefore, you should send messengers to invite him back and let's have a proper wedding and everything. And then everybody, yeah. So we see is that you have to go by what Krishna's point is, what he's decided. You can't just make up your own from your own position. It's what does Krishna say on this point? What is his position? And that we gain from the acharyas. And then from that, now we apply it into our life. That's how Manu says you should do things. You first start with the Veda, then with the Smriti, then with what the acharyas and other great personalities say. Then we apply it into our life.
Yes.
But the inductive, it always starts, my values, my house, my rules, right? So it's my values, my place, my world, like this. So therefore, everybody has to look at it that way. And so even Krishna has to fit into that. Because as soon as they say, oh, Krishna won't accept this because, you know, he won't accept anything that's not, you know, proper, this, that. That means Krishna is only part of their morality. It's not that they've surrendered their body, mind, and words and that to Krishna. Because if, and what if you say, no, it's like this way. So for Krishna, oh, okay, if Krishna accepts, then, you know, how can he be, you know, the supreme? Yeah, come back in 10 years. Are they still saying this? Are they still organic? You know what I'm saying? There's only a few people. There are those individuals that, 20 years ago, they were into organic. Today, they're into organic, but they're quiet. They just do it. And the ones that are so vocal and all that, yesterday, they were eating anything. Today, now they're organic. Tomorrow, they'll be eating anything again. It's just some issue to get the blood moving, to get the bile. Because if the bile doesn't move, you don't digest. And so, you know, like that. So that's the difficulty, is that we have to see is, no, Krishna is the standard. He's the gold standard. Everything is judged according to him. How do we know what he wants? That's the acharyas. That's how we have to approach. And if we take these modern atheistic positions, it won't work very good for us. It really won't.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And then... in answer to the first doubt, when a devotee takes shelter of a pure body, the Lord gains the highest satisfaction by his nature. When the devotee sees the Lord's affection for the devotee, that same quality develops in the devotee. Right? Yeah. So when the devotee is taking shelter of the transcendental position and serving the Lord, then Krishna gets the highest satisfaction. And then the devotee sees the Lord's affection and his sat, then he takes on those same qualities. He comes to that same bliss. Prabhupada says it's like that. Krishna, the devotee does something to make Krishna happy. Krishna becomes happy, the devotee becomes more happy, and then the Lord seeing that becomes more happy again. It just keeps going up. You know, that. Parikit speaks to the sages. You have no goal except to give mercy to others in this world and in the next. Actually, that is your very nature. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:19:23. In the story of Jada Bharat, it is said, Sindhu Pataya Atma Sattvam Vi Janayata Paranubhava Parama Karuni Katayo Adishya. Jada Bharat, having the highest realization, though insulted by the king, out of great mercy instructed the king on spiritual matters. Srimad Bhagavatam 5:13:24. So he's seeing everything equally, Jada Bharat, right? Otherwise, he's been insulted, but he knows he's a king. Kings do that. Their pride, this is just how they act. So you don't take it personally. It's not technically personal. It's just how they react by the modes. And so then he still, because he showed an interest, therefore, he's instructed. Narada in his previous life described the sages. Though the sages saw everything equally, they showed mercy to me, by which I, though a boy, developed sense control, gave up child's play and all agitation, became obedient, served attentively, and spoke little. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:5:24. I offer my respects to he whose treasure is unalloyed devotees, who is devoid of material interest, who is disinterested in those who are not devotees, who forgives his devotees, and helps the devotee desiring liberation. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:8:27. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has no direct connection with material activities. All his acts and deeds, which are exhibited even in this material world, are spiritual and without affection for the modes of material nature. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that all his acts, even his appearance and disappearance in and out of the material world, are transcendental. And one who knows this perfectly shall not take his birth again in this material world, but will go back to Godhead. The material disease is due to hankering after and lording over material nature. This hankering is due to an interaction of the three modes of nature. Neither the Lord nor the devotees have attachment for such false enjoyment. Because there's this idea, if you work with the material energy in this way, it'll give a result that'll make you happy. But they know that that's not true. Devotees know it's just an interaction of the modes. How can that bring any satisfaction from the jiva who is beyond the modes? Because you always have to remember, even your condition, the soul still is the soul. And so being that they're in that transcendental position, nothing on the material platform can satisfy them. So even if they identify with the material energy, it doesn't mean it will satisfy them. Because they are who they are. Right? The soul remains in this transcendental position. Right? He accepts the coverings by the modes of nature. But it doesn't mean his actual position changes. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that all his acts, even his appearance and disappearance, in and out of the material world, are transcendental. And one who knows this perfectly shall not take his birth again in this material world, but will go back to Godhead. The material disease is due to hankering after and lording it over material nature. This hankering is due to an interaction of three modes of nature, and neither the Lord nor the devotees have an attachment to such false enjoyment. Therefore, the Lord and the devotees are called Nivritta Guna Vritti. The perfect Nivritta Guna Vritti is the Supreme Lord because he never becomes attracted by the modes of material nature. Whereas the living beings have such a tendency, some of them are entrapped by the illusory attraction of material nature. Because the Lord is the property of the devotees, and the devotees are the property of the Lord. Reciprocally, the devotees are certainly transcendental to the modes of material nature. That is a natural conclusion. Such unalloyed devotees are distinct from the mixed devotees who approach the Lord for mitigation of miseries and poverty or because of inquisitiveness and speculation. The unalloyed devotees and the Lord are transcendentally attached to one another. For others, the Lord has nothing to reciprocate, and therefore he is called Atmarama, self-satisfied. Self-satisfied as he is the master of all monists who seek to merge into the existence of the Lord. Such monists merge within the personal effulgence of the Lord, called the Brahma Jyoti, but the devotees enter into the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, which are never to be misunderstood as material. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.27 purport. Akinchana Vitaya means, quote, to he who has devotees as his treasure, end quote. If this quality did not exist, there would arise the fault of ingratitude in the Lord. So if there's ingratitude in the Lord, why would people be approaching him with gratitude? Right? Because that's the one, the jnani means the one who is the gratitude aspect of gratitude, though there may be that aspect of speculation. With the quality of affection for his devotees, by destroying devotees' suffering and giving them bliss, the Lord's own bliss develops. There is a function of the Sarup Shakti, which is the highest essence called Ladini. The essence of the Ladini is Bhakti. That Bhakti, called Rati, always exists in the Lord and his devotee. Thus it is said, Bhagavan Bhakti Bhaktiman. The Lord has devotion to his devotee. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.86.59. Thus, there is no destruction of satisfaction in the Lord, since the Lord is satisfied by the devotion, part of the Lord's Srup Shakti situated in the devotee. Right? So the Srup Shakti means, Bhakti means you have Ladini Shakti, right? Which will be the Ananda portion. Of that, the essence is devotional service. And in that, then that is manifest as Rakhi, or attraction to the Lord, that devotion to the Lord. So therefore, then there can't be a diminishment, you know, by the Lord interacting with the devotees, but not with the non-devotees, because that interaction is based on that Ladini Shakti, on that Bhakti. And that's part of his Sarup. It's inherent in him. Therefore, then there's never going to be any dissatisfaction on the Lord's part. Well, you know, the doubt was that if he only interacts with the devotees and ignores the demons, then there's going to be dissatisfaction on his part and the devotees, because they're not being equal and not, you know, interacting with everybody and everything like that. But by his sarup, that Ananda principle is bhakti, and that's what's being expressed. That's what's being exchanged. And so, therefore, how can the Lord be dissatisfied? It's inherent in his nature. Right? And then the soul also has that, you know, a portion of that quality. Therefore, then, they have a natural position through those common qualities to interact. Yeah. Moreover, because bhakti is the Lord's Shakti, by its very nature, it is different and non-different from him. Yeyatamam prapadyante, tams tataiva bhajamyaham. I respond according to the surrender of my devotee, Bhagavad Gita 4.11. Because bhakti appears to be different in the devotee's heart, the Lord experiences astonishing bliss, thinking, his bhakti gives me joy. The sarupa bhakti is the quality of appearing different in the Lord and his devotee. So bhakti means the Ladini Shakti means giving Krishna pleasure. The essence of that is bhakti. So this bhakti, the sarupa bhakti, is that it has the quality of appearing different in the Lord and in the devotee, even though it's the same Shakti. Within the devotee, it impresses the Lord that, oh, their bhakti is so special. And for the devotee, then the Lord's, you know, his attention and his reciprocation is so special, even though it's one quality. But its inherent, its sarup is that it will make things appear to be different. You know what I'm saying? Even though it's the same thing. Right? It's that devotional ecstasy, it's the same position, but you're able to see it's different, just like Krishna is everything, but at the same time, all living entities have individual consciousness and individual willpower. And so in this way, then the past doesn't manifest because of that difference. Does that make sense? So it's always going to have, bhakti is also going to have the one and difference. It's one platform of devotion, but its difference is that it's manifest differently in each different individual. And so therefore you can taste it. One devotee's devotion will be different than another devotee's devotion, even though it's all rati. Does that make any sense? So it's the one and difference. If you put too much on the one, then you lose the person. If you put too much on the difference, you lose the thing that actually holds it together. You know, that's what you see is that in the mode of passion, you know, the Puranas written for those in the mode of passion, that when the pastimes are described, you see that that difference is so strong. And so the strong qualities, the strong emotions, all that take the prominence rather than that oneness aspect of the devotion and the that common platform of shared, how you say, qualities and experience. So you have to have both. It means there has to be a commonality, otherwise there's nothing in common. You know, and at the same time is, there has to be a difference, otherwise how do you tell the difference? So Krishna, that's the point. He's one and different. Everything's him, but at the same time he's not. But he's a person. It's the person that's one and different. And so we as persons are one and different. So you always have to see the personal as the root, not the impersonal. Right? Inductive, then you're going to see the impersonal because that's as high as you can get. You can't see the personal beyond. Right, but it's a reflection. So therefore, the highest here is the impersonal, but on the spiritual world, that's the lowest. That's just the platform you function on. And this over here, it's the goal. That's the platform you're trying to get to, you know, so that's the goal. While in the spiritual world, it's just a platform. Does that make sense? You know, it'd be like somebody in the water. They're just thinking how to get onto the pier. That's their goal. But somebody who's on the pier, then they're thinking, you know, we'll walk, we'll talk, we'll eat something, we'll do things. The pier is not a goal for them. The pier is where they interact. But the person in the water, you know, if he's having trouble, he just wants to get on the pier. But that's the difficulty, is that the only point of getting on the pier is then to be able to interact in normal life, right? So the normal spiritual life. But because they, you know, as Prabhu pointed out before, they have such pessimism towards life here that they don't think that there's life there. So they just want to be in a safe position, but they don't want to. So it's just that safety, but it's not about actually interacting as individuals. So they've rejected the concept of that personal. Yeah.
Maharaj. Maharaj, this same point you're explaining in Chaitanya Shikshamrita, that the topic of rasa, that rasa is one when in Krishna, and yeah, then it manifests as many later on.
Yes, yes. It means that oneness is where he sees everything as his.
Yes.
But it's him, the person, everything is his. Not that he's everything, just it all merges. It's him, the person, everything is his. And then everything that's his has their own personal position and their rasa with him. Then when he reciprocates that third position, that becomes that becomes your pastime. So the basis is going to be, means every, he sees everything. And so rasa, everything's imbued with rasa because it's him. But when that individual position with that rasa now acts in accordance with him, that becomes, as we mentioned here, the ladini, that makes it that you can have that point. So that rasa, the ladini, the sarupa is that you can appreciate there's that oneness, but there's the difference, the sarup that brings out that difference. And so therefore you see that Radha and Krishna are talking about that the difference in how the mood they feel that they're one. Right? Because the ladini makes the difference, the prominent, because that's where the taste is. In other words, taste comes from difference, you know, based on a oneness. But it's all personal. It starts with the person. It doesn't go into anything else. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. So, Maharaj, so that aspect of that oneness is that aspect of Krishna as Ananga. That's that highest bliss when Krishna.
But that, that Ananga is coming from his appreciation of the devotee's service to the point where it's coming from appreciating the service so much that he becomes stunned like that. So Ananga is coming from that. No, the other way where he says the one. The where Krishna as rasa is one means he encompasses all things in that sense of possession that it's his, because it is.
Okay.
But when that when what is possessed, you know, it means his energies, when they then interact with him based on their own individual, willpower, then that attracts Krishna's attention, because that then gives a higher pleasure. That's why it says Krishna originally is one, then he expands as two, because then it increases the pleasure. And then so therefore he's looking at it as that aspect of encompassing everything as one, so it's all there. But then when you have two, then there he's appreciating that devotion. But then when that devotion is then that common expression between them, and that oneness of trying to please the other becomes so prominent, then that sense of oneness, then you know, Radha and Krishna together, then that becomes Lord Chaitanya. So it becomes one again, but it's two as one. Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj. So this is the most esoteric aspect within that simultaneous one and different philosophy.
Yes, there's that they're both happening at once. So you don't lose the oneness, because there's oneness in that mood, that attraction, that aspect of rasa. But at the same time, there's two, because there's two individuals that are experiencing the one thing. And that intensity, because it's like you experience one thing, the other person experiences another. And, you know, then that's one thing. But if there's something common, then, oh, hey, you know, but if the commonality is complete, then that feeling of oneness is complete, but it's two people feeling the oneness. So it's not like this without qualities. It's without all the unlimited qualities and flavors and everything like this. So it's opposite of what the monists are thinking about. So,
yes, Maharaj. So basically, the rasa tattva cannot be understood, explained, unless one understands that the philosophy of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva.
I mean, if one has that natural spontaneous attraction, then it can be, then that, but that would have happened immediately. So if when you first come in contact with it, you're rolling on the ground in ecstasy out of pure love for Krishna, okay. But if that didn't happen, then as you said, you're going to go through step by step through sadhana bhakti, understand. Because the point is, you have to know the philosophy, because like this, doubts come up. You have to be able to deal with them. Right? Because why do you have to why are we dealing with the doubt? The doubt is getting in the way of their accepting Krishna consciousness. you know, accepting it, understanding it, practicing it, valuing it, you know, make it in, as the goal, all these different things, you know, making it as the identity, as I'm serving the Krishna. So all the doubts are getting in the way of all these things. So that's why then these are removed. That, yeah. Okay. So I think we're... Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai.